That's what's going on. So it's not that I'm having a bad day.
We live.
We're live.
Live from Chicago and Las Vegas. You're tuned in to the show that's always on top of what's trending. It's Page One.
It's Page One.
With LeVar and Mary.
With LeVar and Mary.
What's going on, Blog Talk Radio Nation and Page One Nation from coast to coast around the world? You are listening to Page One. It is Friday night. It is May the 10th. It is here in the States because some of you are listeners around the globe. But here in the States, it is Mother's Day weekend. Before I even forget, and I hope I don't before the show ends, to all of you, including my wonderful co-host, Mary, who are mothers, wonderful mothers, happy Mother's Day. I know all of you would rather, as a gift, get a day of relaxation away from everyone but your mom. So, unfortunately, your kids will get you probably the best that they can. But, happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. I'm saying thank you for everybody.
Yes. Yes. You know, in comparison to Father's Day, where the traditional gift is usually like a tie, I know the traditional Mother's Day gift here is always flowers. I don't know. Do you think that's changed in recent years? Do you think it's like, is it still flowers or is there like something new?
Maybe I'm just a part of a weird family. I mean, we've already established that, but we never really did flowers. We did plants. So that was always potted. Something that, you know, just another thing for mom to keep alive.
We're getting another project.
Yeah, right. Potted plants usually were flowering bushes or, you know, mums. Some of those things are the bushes that have flowers. I don't know. I was lucky enough that my kid never went to do that. She just made me paper flowers, and I'm okay with that, too. Because I never have to forget to water them.
I was going to say, I guess rather potted plants than potted meat. That would be the best gift. I think we touched on this briefly last week. I think you were talking about the fact of, and I'm trying to pick up from our conversation last week and try to remember, where you had started to go into a diatribe about moms wanting that one day of not having to do anything and pretty much like having a day of nothing, correct?
Yeah, I know a lot of moms that would love to have that. Me being one of them, unfortunately, I don't think that's going to ever happen. Decision fatigue. We have a hard time letting go of how things should be done.
Yes, you do.
And I will say we. I will say we. I am part of this mess.
Nope, I agree, because none of you, and I mean this in the most sincere way, none of you are ever happy with how things are done. You can ask for it to be done, but it always, just like a person who is a, and I mean, like I said, I mean this in the most loving and sincere way, you moms are kind of like, they're bosses that are, that look over your shoulder to make sure, not micromanage, I don't want to say micromanage, but I mean it in a loving way, because you can tell somebody to wipe off the sink, and if they wipe off the sink, and if there's still a little bit of water residue or something, you'll go back and look, and then you'll probably complete the process yourself, or if you ask someone to sweep, you'll probably look around looking for some. It's almost like that those sergeants in the movies where, you know, they ask someone to clean and then they'll go and they'll look at the top of like a shelf and then they'll take the white glove and just be like, oh yeah, you missed a spot. And then you're gonna go back and you do it yourself. So I know.
That is probably the best analogy for moms out there. No offense to anyone. I'm part of this group that I could ever come up with. We are drill sergeants, and our army are our little army, our little cadets are we can't beat up our cadets the way they do in the Army, Navy, or Marines. So that's the only difference between us and drill sergeants. And I think that what drill sergeants do is they basically turn on their inner mom.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why we have some of the best military out there.
Yep. Exactly. I think that's the best way to probably put it. But it's in a loving way. But the world does not revolve without moms who do a lot of different duties at the end of the day. You are doctors, you are nurses, you are teachers, you are chauffeurs, you are therapists, you are pretty much
referees,
wardens, you are a little bit of everything. So it's your police officers, fire department, there's a lot of different, if you name the job, it is loosely correlated with being a mom in some ways. So yeah. So thank you, moms, and to my mom, thank you. It is it's a thankless job at times, but no, thank you, mom. So with that, on this Mother's Day weekend edition of Page One, we have quite a bit of things to get through tonight. I did not tell Mary what this show will evolve. Last week, I think we kind of had a pretty good show where we went all the way to the end just on topics that were just potpourri topics. We'll have a couple of main topics tonight. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we will have the Almanac. We'll also take a look at what's trending. A couple of sad stories today from what's trending. Then we'll have potpourri, and then we will have a few After Dark segments, because I know that's Mary's favorite.
Smoking Gun's another one.
Yes. Unfortunately, though, Smoking Gun one, on this Mother's Day weekend, there really wasn't any stories of note. There was one, but I don't think it really was kind of like worth like talking about tonight, because it was it's a pretty gross story, and I don't think it is probably worth even sharing. If you want to see it, you can go onto the smokinggun.com probably to see it, but I won't even go that route tonight. So it's a very graphic one, I'll put it that way. But yes, so the Almanac, because this is May 10th, last week we did talk to you about what was ahead. We gave you a heads up. Today, being May 10th, it is National State of Washington Day. It is National Clean Up Your Room Day. Did you clean up your room today?
Yes, I had to.
It's also National Lipid Day. It's National Shrimp Day, for those of you who like shrimp.
Which I do.
And unfortunately, I do not. It is National Military Spouse Appreciation Day today as well. So if you know a military spouse, I guess you can thank them as well, because they're probably the most patient people that take on quite a bit. Yes, it's also National Provider Appreciation Day. National Dog Moms Day is tomorrow. It's also National Eat What You Want Day on tomorrow.
Nice. So I
start
ahead.
Start
I started today.
Yeah, yeah. I started last week, and I'm still celebrating. So it is National Foam Rolling Day. Actually, that reminds me. I need to order one. It's also National Archery Day. That's something that I've always wanted to do but never had a chance to do.
There's a large group of people that do archery around here, and they've invited me out a few times. I just never had, like, all of our schedules never lined up, which kind of sucks. But, yeah, it's part of our corporate challenge.
Have you ever done it, though?
Archery? Yes. But it's been a very long time. And I don't know if that counts. Like, I mean, there was a bow, there was an arrow, there was a target. But what I did, I don't know I'd call that archery.
You know the mini form of that, though, right?
Okay.
Darts.
I was so afraid there was going to be a dad joke in there, and I was like, wait, say that for June.
Nope. Ooh, you just reminded me. Probably around Father's Day weekend, we will have to have, like, really bad dad jokes. We'll probably have to ask
them. Well, I've got a list of them.
Yeah, I know you do. So, do you have I was going to ask you if you had a top five of the worst. You know, you might have to do a top five of the worst dad jokes ever.
All of them? Yeah. What? If they're good, they're bad. That's the point.
That's what we're
I heard
for.
One recently that has gotten a lot of groans in the office.
Uh-oh. Do you want to share, or do you want to keep that close to the vest until Father's
No,
Day?
I can share it. I can share it. It's just
Go
about
right
dragons.
Ahead.
It's just about dragons. Dragons don't explode, but a dino might. And you're welcome.
And I don't have that sound clip, but I guess I'll have to. Peter, when he just goes,
wah, wah, wah.
Best I could do is just a good Cleveland. No. Yeah.
With the explosion goes along with it. I approve.
Yeah, that's the best I could do. Tomorrow, so Saturday also, was National Train Day. It was discontinued by Amtrak in 2016, it says here, but it's National Train Day. We'll celebrate still nonetheless. Also, another favorite thing of mine to do is tomorrow. It is National Miniature Golf Day. I love it. Yes, I love it. Is there, you know, all the time I've been out there that I've come out there,
mm-hmm.
Are there good miniature golf places in Las Vegas?
I don't know. I'd say good. There are miniature golf places in Las Vegas, but they're all indoors because, you know,
okay.
otherwise you wouldn't be able to play.
I said, nobody wants to be out in the heat.
Exactly. So they're all indoors, which also means they're smaller.
There were a few in Arizona, and I think they actually had also like an inside one where it was glow-in-the-dark putt-putt golf. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. And I know they had a nighttime golf too, which was outside, which I think I like to do. Probably a lot of people getting hit with flying balls from everywhere, but yeah. Miniature Golf Day is tomorrow. Saturday, before Mother's Day, is National Babysitter's Day. Is also, and I am going to get this so wrong, it is Cornelia DeLange Syndrome Awareness Day. I can see the look in your face saying, what the heck is that?
Yes.
It is a day that sheds light on an often misdiagnosed little-known syndrome. It is CDLS. It causes a range of physical, cognitive, and medical challenges. It's a genetic disorder that, even though present at birth, it's not always diagnosed at birth. It affects the physical and intellectual development of a child. It's often known as Bushy syndrome or Amsterdam dwarfism. CDLS can also lead to severe developmental abnormalities affecting an estimated 1 in 10 to 30,000 people. So that day is tomorrow. It is also National Birth Mother's Day, the Saturday before Mother's Day. It's Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive Day. And then tomorrow is another national day. It is National Twilight Zone Day.
Like the old-timey Twilight Zone?
Yes.
You talking black and white Twilight Zone, William Shatner getting sucked out of an airplane Twilight Zone?
Yep. Same show that was created, written, and narrated by Rod Serling. It premiered on October 1st, 1959. And yes, so one says a few great party ideas to get you started. You can make fifth dimension pinwheels. You can offer fortune cookies. You can cook a Valentine's steak. mix up some beverages while snacking, play some trivia. And you can invite guests to dress up as characters from their favorite episodes. I always tell people, I really didn't watch a lot of The Twilight Zone, but I think the favorite one that always comes to mind is the one with the, was it the bookworm, and who wanted all the books in the world to himself, and then finally when it happened and he was the only person, what happens? He lost his glasses and he stepped on them and he couldn't read them.
Yeah.
Which is like...
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember that one. That is not necessarily my favorite. My favorite is The Man on the Wing. Again, that's the one with William Shatner. He's on an airplane. This was back when airplanes had seats, like chairs and that kind of thing, and curtains on the windows. And he looks out the curtain, and he swears there's a person on the wing, so he opens the window.
I think I am
on this airplane.
Yeah,
and then get sucked out.
So pretty much it was Captain Kirk getting sucked out of an airplane.
Yeah, basically. And then that's probably why it was my favorite, because it was like, really, Captain Kirk? Did you not take the safety training that you were supposed to on the Enterprise? Come on.
Nope, he did not. He did not. Actually, you know what? The Twilight Zone, now that it reminds me of it, there was a couple of great old-time radio programs, radio in here in the U.S., before pre-Twilight Zone, that were kind of like the Twilight Zone. So if you ever get a chance and you are online, you might want to bring up either a radio program that was called The Whistler, or you can bring up Suspense. Those were a couple of great ones that sometimes had twist endings, kind of like the Twilight Zone. So... but just on the radio. I really did like The Whistler because it was like endings out of left field that, you know, it could be someone that, you know, did something and they almost got away with it, but they were like the result of their own downfall, where it was like, yeah, you almost would have got away with it if you hadn't done this and this. And then this show pretty much ends just like that, and that was what happened. But yeah, listen to The Whistler if you get a chance. So, Sunday.
Sounds like Scooby-Doo.
Right. But there was no Meddling Kids.
Okay.
Sunday. It is National Sapphire Segula Day. You don't need an explanation for that, do you?
No.
Did I pronounce it wrong?
No, I don't know how to pronounce it, but I know.
Well, no,
what
it's
you
a day of gratitude for single parents and special needs children to remind them of their service and sacrifices of love are seen, appreciated, not in vain.
Right.
So that's Sapphire Segula Day. Mother's Day, of course, is Sunday. It is National Fibromyalgia Awareness Day, National Nutty Fudge Day, it's National Odometer Day. Mother's Day Sunday is also National Limerick Day. Did you have a limerick for us that you care to share?
No, I actually, that had I known, I would have prepared one, but I did not.
Oh.
I know, right?
And then Monday, it is National Crouton Day. It's also National Fruit Cocktail Day. It's National Women's Checkup Day, second Monday in May. National Apple Pie Day. We'll have something special to commemorate that here coming up in a little bit. National Frog Jumping Day. The 14th is National Decency Day. It's National Buttermilk Biscuit Day. National Underground America Day. The 14th of May on Tuesday is National Dance Like a Chicken Day.
Sorry.
I hope you did not actually do that.
Chicken dance.
May 15th is Bring Flowers to Someone Day. So on May 15th, if you bring flowers to someone, that's what the day is. It's also National Juice Slush Day. It's National Nylon Stocking Day. National Chocolate Chip Day. It's Peace Officers Memorial Day. The 16th is National Coquilles St. Jacques Day. Have you had that?
Very French.
Coquilles Saint Jacques. It is the classic French dish. It is scallops in a creamy wine sauce covered with breadcrumbs and cheese before it's browned and placed under a broiler. Cooks usually make the seafood scallop dish with a mixture of butter, cream, mushrooms, and their favorite cheese. Coquilles Saint Jacques is also known as the shell of Saint James.
Nice.
Which the scallop shell is
sounds
a symbol
good.
Of St. James.
I may have had it, just didn't know that I had it, you know?
Yes. St. James, one of Jesus' 12 apostles. So you might have. That sounds like a really rich dish.
Yes.
May 16th.
Also
is,
expensive.
Yes. May 16th is National Mimosa Day. It's National Barbecue Day. It's National Do Something Good for Your Neighbor Day. It is Honor Our LGBT Elders Day. It's National Piercing Day. National Biographers Day. National Sea Monkey Day. It's National Love a Tree Day. I hope you don't do that literally. And it is also National Classic Movie Day. Do you have a favorite classic movie?
I have a lot of classic movies that I enjoy and that I will go back to. But one that you know about is every holiday. Holiday Inn. That is fun.
Yes. And I will be shocked if you remember what mine was.
For the holidays?
No. Favorite classic movie.
Oh, no, I don't remember. I know that you are a fan of The Miracle on 34th Street, but that's holidays. No, not Miracle. Not Miracle. It was the other one. I'm getting them mixed up now. My brain just stopped. Oh, no. It's a Wonderful Life. There it is. I was like, no.
I'll watch it every once in a while, but actually one of my favorite classic movies is 12 Angry Men.
That's right. You have told me that.
Yes.
I should remember that.
Well,
I actually am one of those people that just really like, there was three people I always loved watching, and that was Bing Crosby, Fred Astaire. I can't seem to speak today. And then, oh my God, I lost his name. I see his face. He was in White Christmas. He was a doctor on The Cosby Show.
Danny Kaye?
Danny Kaye. There it is. I was going through the vacation thing. Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny Kaye.
Yes, Danny Kaye.
Yeah, but those three I would watch religiously.
Yes. Actually, Jimmy Stewart, he is a favorite. He is, you know, the thing was that when it comes to classic movie characters, I'm trying to think of like, because I think like current day, you know, I am a big fan of Tom Hanks and, you know, Denzel Washington and George Clooney. It is, you know, I'm trying to think of like classic movie people. I want to badly say Humphrey Bogart, but like Bogart played Bogart. It was like his role.
Yeah, they didn't have a. He did play a character. The character was written for him.
Right. Bogart played Bogart. Jimmy Stewart was kind of like what Tom Hanks is. You know, you could place him in any role, But after a while, it becomes, you look more at how away from Jimmy Stewart plays the character. It's kind of like Tom Hanks. You know, when Tom Hanks was in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, even though he was playing Mr. Rogers, all you could do is sit there and be like, that's Tom Hanks doing a good Mr. Rogers impersonation. And after a while, not that it's against them, anything against them, but it's, you see them for them. Just like George Clooney, it's like, oh, that's George Clooney. Who's playing George Clooney, who's playing a character. That's about it.
Right.
So, yeah, nothing against them. That's just how good they are of an actor. Malcolm X Day is on Friday. It is also National Idaho Day next Friday. It is National Graduation Tassel Day. I don't know why they would have a day for tassels unless you wear them after graduation. And even then, that's something that you do in your own bedroom. National Walnut Day is on the 17th. The third Friday in May is NASCAR Day. It is also next Friday, and I want to give you all a heads up. It is National Bike to Work Day, as well as Bike to School Day. National Defense Transportation Day. Cherry Cobbler Day. Pack Rat Day. National Endangered Species Day. And also, on that day, it is National Pizza Party Day, the third Friday in May.
So, that sounds like that was the day that, like, right before the end of school, so that's why you had your pizza parties. But then also, like, did you do Book It?
Here's the thing. We did not. We usually had those Scholastic fairs where, you know, they would give you the little booklet like weeks in advance before they came to your school, and you would be so excited. You'd want to buy like a million things out of there. Now, this is what killed me about the whole thing. You would be so excited about it. You'd be like, I want this book, this book, this book. And, you know, it was a little bit expensive, so probably, you know, your parents probably were like, yeah, you can only get like one or two and call it a day after that. And you're like, but I want to read. This is the one other time in one of my books, and I want to read. So we had, like, the Scholastic book fairs where we'd go in there, and, you know, if you had a little bit of extra money left, you could get a bookmark and all that other good stuff. And they usually had it in the library, which was pretty cool. But,
yeah,
no, we didn't
we
have
had those
book
as well. But we had Book It with the for the uninitiated, or for the, well, not uninitiated, for the youngins out there, Book It was Pizza Hut paired with your school, and you had to read a certain amount of books or a certain amount of pages, and you'd get a free personal pan pizza.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I was reading that as much as I could because I wanted the pizza.
So what did you have to do for that? I know it was an honor system. Did you have to, like, do a book report or something, or?
Yeah, we had to, it's been a really long time, people, so bear with me here. You'd read the book, but you'd have to, there was always a one page, like, basically the report. So you had to put, like, the name of the book, the name of the author, what the book genre was about. So if it was a fiction, a nonfiction, mystery, fantasy, whatever. And then you had to give, and it usually was the rest. So those were like the top three lines, and then the rest of the page was like a book report. You had to fill the rest of the page about the book. So you couldn't, and you had to have a number of pages too. So you couldn't read like a four-page book. It had to be a certain amount of pages.
I read a book. It was about a turtle. The end.
Yeah, it couldn't be Sea Spot Run, okay, and you were in fifth grade. You couldn't read that, but you...
Is that like when you do those, like, 10-piece puzzles, and then you're like, I did a puzzle. It's ten pieces. It's these big pieces.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's taken me 5 days to do this puzzle. How many pieces was in the puzzle? Four.
Four.
Yeah, you couldn't get you couldn't do that. You had to, it was a certain, like, there was a minimum number of pages each book had to be, and then the more, and then it was pages and your book report. So if you read Catcher in the Rye in fourth grade, why anybody would do that, but if you read that being as many pages as it is, you, that would forego, like, somebody else who was reading 100 page Barbie and the Magic Factory books, you know. I was doing a lot of Nancy Drew and Boxcar Kids, so.
You didn't do the, you couldn't do like a book report on those like Choose Your Own Adventure books?
No, because the Choose Your Own Adventure books weren't long enough. They didn't have enough pages.
It could have been dependent upon the adventure that you took. Did you go down in the cellar? And it's like, you sometimes, and I know you're like me, you probably cheated. You ran ahead to page 75, you know, if you did get out of the cellar. And then you really
Well, I read all the endings. Of course I did.
Of course you did. Of course. But no, I had a few. I think I still do have a few of those, the Choose Your Own Adventure book somewhere that was packed away. So, yeah. Actually, you know, I was a big fan of the Ramona books growing up.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, for some odd reason, I had, like, quite a few of those. But, no, I usually got those around the time of you know, the book fairs and stuff like that. And, yeah, nope. I was a big fan of those. So,
yeah.
I haven't read
them. Nope. Instead, I was one that liked, you know, children, unattended children living homeless out of a railroad car. And not seeing anything wrong with it. Like, that was the part I was like, oh, yeah, this is right. This is okay.
No, we were actually, that brings to mind a very good, well, I'm going to have a question here for you. That's kind of, it wasn't even planned for tonight, but I saw it today and I was kind of taken aback. And it has something to do with a television show that makes, going to make you think differently. Before I do that, though, I kind of wanted to talk about, because I mentioned the most interesting thing that I read this week. The most interesting thing that I did see this week had to involve something in which it can happen, but it's also a tale of being careful. You know, it's easier to change a song lyric than it is to change a tattoo of it. And that's exactly what happened for an Olivia Rodrigo fan by the name of Grace Fleming. She first heard of Rodrigo's song Hope You're Okay in 2021 when the three-time Grammy-winning singer released it on her album Sour. And she immediately knew that she wanted a tattoo of one of the lyrics. The lyrics go, and I quote, "Address the letters to the holes in my butterfly wings." So she finally got the ink last month in her waist, only to discover that it incorrectly read butter wings instead of butterfly wings. Fleming posted a TikTok about it on April 20th, encouraging people to double-check spellings before getting tattoos. She was emotional in a video that now has more than 1 million views. In the caption, she asked Rodrigo to change the lyric so her tattoo is correct. She says, "I'm literally crying over my nails right now," she says. The vampire singer left a comment May 6th saying that Fleming's tattoo was the new lyric. She typed, and I quote, "Ha ha 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 ha, OMG, this is the new lyric. I'm changing it to butter wings," Rodrigo wrote. Fleming says she can't believe Rodrigo saw the video, let her own respond it. Now she doesn't know if she'll take up the tattoo artist's offer to fix the tattoo so it matches the original lyric. Not changing it definitely makes it more unique and special. I kind of want to keep it, but also want to get the right lyrics. Maybe I'll keep this one and get the right lyrics somewhere else, she says. The lyric is her favorite of Rodrigo's, Fleming says. She has long admired how caterpillars turn into butterflies. She says everybody already has their own wounds or holes. So I take the line, "Address the letters to the holes of my butterfly wings," to say if someone's going to say something mean, they can say it to me, but it's just going to go through me. It's going to go through that hole, she says. She toyed around with actually getting the tattoo for 3 years. Once her mind was made up, though, it only took her a week to plan a design. Fleming asked her tattoo artist to stitch together words Rodrigo had previously written in letters and emails sent to fans so the tattoo would appear to be in the singer's handwriting. And she says that she's been a Rodrigo fan since 2015, so it was so exciting to have a piece of her favorite artist on her. She admits she didn't fully read the text when the tattoo artist showed her the stencil. She says, "I'm such a person who's like, I want to see the finished product, just do it. It looks great, I can't wait." She left the parlor joyful and unaware of the error. Then she then sent a picture to her boyfriend, who immediately noticed the typo. She said the little bubbles were typing for so long, and I was like, what is he going to say? Does he think it looks bad? What is it? He finally responded, "Did you take out the fly?" And Fleming says she just stared at his text, thinking there's no way. She went to sleep and woke up the next day assuming it was just a dream, but it wasn't a dream.
I'm laughing because I know she's like going to get over it and laugh about it, and that's going to be her story, and it's going to be fine. As a person with tattoos, it's devastating, and I get it. I get it.
Well, you know, because of that, her mom, who does not like any of her five tattoos, is used to mix up to bolster her case of why she shouldn't get tattoos. She says she's learned to embrace the error. She says, sometimes I get a little angry about it, but it's so funny. I tell random strangers who are like, I like your tattoo, and I'm like, oh, well, let me show you. She says, it's kind of become such a big thing where she's like, oh, this really is a good mistake. So she's starting to take it in stride. Yeah. Just a warning, kids. You know, it's like that Snickers commercial where it had no regrets.
Yeah.
This is what happened.
This is what happened. Exactly.
Oh, man. How do you proofread a tattoo that eventually can...
You should have proofread it before they put the paper on you to do the stencil. The whole point, you're supposed to do that. Oh,
man,
but yes, I get it. But that's why I'm saying I get it. I understand it, especially the whole, I'm just excited. Like, I've been working on this. This is my idea. Like, hurry it up. But
yeah.
When it comes to words, man.
TV shows are kind of coming to here in the States. They're kind of coming to their season finales, series finales. But I was flipping through today, and I saw something in which it kind of made you think. Now, all of us growing up watched Family Members, correct? Family Matters, correct? Show about Steve Urkel.
I think so at some point or another.
All of us at one point has seen Family Matters. So today someone typed out something which actually, well, you know, it kind of went in retrospect. When you think about TV shows and heroes and heroines or heroines or however you pronounce it, but you think about different characters on the show, and in hindsight years later, you're like, man, that character was annoying, or man, that character shouldn't have been like, you know, the main protagonist. You know, it's like me. When I look back, and I think I've told you, when I watch I Love Lucy, I kind of look, even though I still love the show, kind of look at it differently. Because Lucy comes off as like this, I hate to say it, but if I'm Ricky, I would be a little bit upset. Ricky, if this was modern day, Lucy comes off as kind of like either at times spoiled or ungrateful or just a troublemaker. You know, someone who always wants to get into her husband's act, who was not good. She wasn't a good singer, not a good dancer, but no matter what, she wanted to be in the show. And she dragged other people into her crazy schemes. And sometimes it backfired against her. And then I think some episodes she would always complain about things that other people had that she didn't. And I was like, man, is this ungrateful. If I'm Ricky, you know, it's like, what the heck? And then in the early episodes, if you look back at the early seasons, like she was always like just crying and just, you know, when she couldn't get her way. It was like a spoiled child. But anyway. I digress. So, Family Matters, there was an article about the character Laura Winslow. And if you remember, that was the object of Steve Urkel's affection. So, someone typed, they said, I can't stand this girl. First of all, Laura wasn't even that cute to be curving Steve like that. He used to love her, but she would only pick dudes that would play her until Steve came around and let her know her worth. She made him change into a completely different person and started loving Stefan Urkel. She didn't want Steve until he was in a perfectly fine relationship with Myra. She's a homewrecker because Steve found somebody else. Now you want him. And then on top of it, she falls in love with him when she was washed up in bald headed, and he said, I couldn't stand her. And then somebody turned it around in the comment section and said, well, as an author perspective, how about Steve couldn't take no for an answer? Wasn't content with just being a friend and socially and emotionally invaded personal spaces to manipulate her feelings. Steve didn't understand that no meant no. Why do women have to accept the unwanted advances of, quote, the nice guy? She wasn't attracted, and he harassed, groomed, and deceptively pretended to be a friend when he had other intentions. Leave women alone when they say no the first time.
I didn't think
about that. And I was like, you know, there's two separate things here as to where both sides could be right in their argument.
Yes. Both sides could. Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah.
So I got to ask the question on this one. Who was in the right and who was in the wrong? And was there ever a TV show in which years later you looked at the character in a different way?
Neither were right. Both were wrong for all the wrong reasons. But I understand why they were doing it, because it's the whole, like, make drama kind of thing. It's not real life. If it was real life, then ill to everybody. The one with the seizures.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It makes you look different at it, because I was like, it was just a simple
growing
family
pains.
Show.
Yeah, growing pains. And then what was the one with, my brain just stopped. Alyssa Milano.
Oh, Who's the Boss?
Who's the Boss, yeah. Like, dude. Grandma was a cougar. Just saying.
Yes, she was.
I forgot the mom's name, but she was the first Karen.
Angela?
Angela, yes.
You, Angela.
A-O-A-Y.
You, you. Of course, you never want to have Tony Danza and Stallone in the same movie, because all you're getting is ew, ew, ew. Right. And if you had Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Things don't age well.
No, they don't.
But then if you look at them for what it was trying to do, it's trying to build drama, and they just kept going back to the same storylines, because that was the thing that brought people to watch the show.
Mhm. So yes. So yeah. Until I read that, I was like, I really didn't think about that, and I'm so glad that person wrote the opposite alternate view, because I was like, Steve Rambo just couldn't take no. He kept, like, trying to put himself in situations just to be there, to be, like, to pick up the pieces. And then when Myra was the better choice. Then she got jealous because Steve was no longer around. So, go figure. Ouch. When we come back, because we're going to have Retro Moment of the Week tonight, when we come back, we'll take a look at what's trending. There is, we're going to try to get through a few stories. I know I'm actually kind of editing as we're going on the fly, because time is just flying so much. But we'll have Potpourri. We'll have a couple of stories here. Then we'll try and do some After Dark here in the next hour. But we are glad that you're with us here on this Friday night on this page one for May 10th. Retro Motor Week is coming up next. So I will tell you, one of the retro moments has to deal with something that, even way back in the early 80s when this commercial aired, we will find that even 40 years later after this commercial aired, that there was no use for the product that it actually was, and it makes me wonder what people were thinking back then, but I'll let you be the judge. And then something for National Apple Pie Day, and something to wash it all down with. That's all I'll say. This is Age 1 with LeVar and Mary here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Hey, Rosie, I see you got one of those newfangled microwave ovens.
Yeah, and a newfangled Bounty to go with it.
A what?
New Bounty microwave.
What's that do?
Makes a difference you can taste. Rolls, pastries, sandwiches.
Yeah, how?
Improve the texture. Watch. I'll heat half of this sandwich wrapped in new Bounty microwave. The other half unwrapped. Let's see.
Okay. Oh, the unwrapped one got soggy.
Moisture collects underneath, but wrapping in Bounty microwave absorbs excess moisture.
Mmm, this is better.
You see, it's the first paper towel made specially for microwaves.
No artificial colors, all natural fibers.
Very good. You can read. Now eat.
Mmm.
No problem. It's the quicker picker-upper, too. Because some things just never change. New Bounty microwave.
Mmm.
Makes a difference you can taste. Look for it next to regular Bounty.
Tempting news. Now McDonald's family restaurants have America's favorite dessert on the menu. Hot apple pie. Like you've never seen or tasted before. Tender, flaky pastry. Plump full of tart sliced apples. And spiced like homemade apple pie. Try it at McDonald's. Your kind of place.
Thirsty riding a skateboard.
Me too. This is a job for Kool-Aid. Hey, Kool-Aid!
Oh yeah, Kool-Aid here, bringing you fun. Kool-Aid's got thirst on the run. Get a big, wide, happy ear.
And here, Kool-Aid smile.
Mmm, tastes great. Our friend's cool.
Our friend's Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid brand soft drink mix.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to Page One.
Page One.
With LeVar and Mary. Your source for all the current topics and news you need to know. Here's LeVar and Mary.
Welcome back to Page One on this Friday night. That Bounty commercial featuring the late, great Nancy Walker. Nancy Walker, born on this date in 1922. So she would have been 102 if she was with us today. Nancy Walker started her career pretty much when she was 10 months old. She made her debut with her parents who were in vaudeville. And then she decided to become an actress at the age of 10. She appeared on a lot of early radio programs, made her Broadway debut in 1941, and then, of course, well-known for her roles on television, where she played the popular housekeeper Mildred on McMillan and Wife with Rock Hudson, and then also she went straight to work pretty much she had a contract to headline her own series, The Nancy Walker Show, which was produced by Norman Lear's production company. Before she filmed the first episode of the series, she had made her only appearance on Rhoda, where she played Rhoda's mom. And then, of course, she was well known for her Bounty commercials. Quite a career for her. She also was a close friend of actor Montgomery Clift. Quite a career for
her. I'm still stuck on the fact that the Kool-Aid man was a hick at first. Apparently he took some, you know, did a little bit of the juice. Started smashing through walls. I did not know. Sometimes it just gets improved with age.
Yep. Actually, you know what, too? He ruined a lot of walls. I think that...
That would be the side effect of the juice, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Oh, but yes. So, the Kool-Aid man. But no, and then McDonald's and their apple pies, which I think they were better back in the, like, when I was growing up. I don't know about now.
Well, everything was better back then. We had way more weird, like, not, like, chemical makeup stuff.
Yes.
Fill me up with bad things like MSG. I'm kidding,
yes.
Of course, but only slightly.
It's the good stuff. So a lot of us around here are flyers on airlines, and I was meaning to do this story last week. But airlines will soon be required to pay you back if they cancel your flight, delay you, or make major changes to the itinerary, or don't deliver your checked bags on time. The change was made official last week when the Department of Transportation issued a final rule stating that passengers deserve to get their money back when an airline owes them without headaches or haggling. That, according to Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who said the written announcement of the new standards. The refunds will need to be offered in cash or straight back to your form of payment. Vouchers don't count. Airlines will also be required to issue the refunds quickly and without passengers having to explicitly request them or jump through hoops, according to the DOT guidance. Here's what you're entitled to under the new rule. If your flight is canceled, you'll be entitled to a full refund. If you'd rather be rebooked to your destination, you can also choose to accept another flight, travel credit, or alternative transportation offered by the airline. It doesn't make a difference if the flight was canceled due to technical issues, weather, or anything else, according to Buttigieg. He says when your flight is canceled for any reason, the requirement applies. If your flight is delayed or changed, new rule also requires airlines to offer refunds when a flight itinerary is significantly changed. That means you can opt to get your money back if your departure or arrival time is changed by 3 hours or more on domestic flights or 6 hours on international flights. The same goes for situations in which your departure or arrival airport is changed, there's a connection added to your itinerary, you're bumped down to a lower class, or if a new flight or airport is less suited to accommodate your disability. As is the case with canceled flights, passengers are entitled to the refund only if they do not accept alternative transportation or travel credits offered. If you have problems with baggage, Wi-Fi, or other services, if you paid to check bags but they are significantly delayed, you'll be entitled to a refund for the baggage fee. Passengers who file a mishandled baggage report will be entitled to a refund of their check bag fee if it's not delivered within 12 hours of their domestic flight arriving at a gate or 15 to 30 hours of their international flight. If you pay for extras on board like Wi-Fi, a seat assignment, or in-flight entertainment, and the airline doesn't deliver what you pay for, you'll be able to get your money back for that, too. The changes will phase in over the next 6 to 12 months. Travelers can learn more about their rights on the agency's website. The department issued a separate rule requiring airlines and ticket agents to disclose up front what they charge for checked and carried on bags and canceling or changing a reservation. On airline websites, the fees must be shown the first time customers see a price and schedule. The rule will also oblige airlines to tell passengers that they have a guaranteed seat they are not required to pay extra for, although it does not bar airlines from charging people to choose specific seats. And the agency said the rule will save consumers more than $500 million per year. As a person who does some lengthy flights throughout the year, how do you feel about the new changes to getting reimbursed?
Okay, so this is going to be a hot take, but I don't necessarily like it.
No.
Completely. I like the idea that it's been made mandatory and that it's been made that I don't have to haggle. However, I'm also, like you said, I do a lot of long-distance traveling. I've looked at the terms and conditions, so I always have a copy of the section for if my flight is canceled, significantly delayed, reasons for that, and what I get for those things. In some cases, not all, in some cases, the consumers may be saving money on the front end of that. And if they get canceled, they're getting their money back for their ticket. But that's not what they were entitled. Like, some of the airlines are saving a ton of money because they used to. One of the airlines that I use for my international travel to the UK, their terms and conditions is that if you are delayed, I think it's 4 hours or maybe it might have been six, for any of their international flights, which causes a delay in entry, you're actually entitled to up to $1,000. Whereas my ticket usually was less than that. So the airlines are saving money too. So yeah, that's my hot take. I like that it's been made mandatory. I like that people don't have to haggle. They don't have to know. But they are, it's not just, it's catering to the airlines as well.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, because of now this whole thing, the airlines are going to use this as their excuse to raise prices.
As if that wasn't pretty much happening too much already.
Right, but you can see where I'm going.
Yeah, no, I can see where you're going with that, because that's actually an interesting take, because I thought for sure as a traveler you're going to say, yeah, we're finally kind of covered under a lot of stuff that normally they probably wouldn't do or they wouldn't halfway do. But that is an interesting and thought on that, because as a person who tries to travel a couple of times a year and hopes to get back to that at some point, I think most airlines try to, even though you almost have to kind of like force the issue sometimes, but most airlines try to do their best to accommodate you. They have already, some have changed their processes for what they do. I remember on a flight in which I was to be in Vegas a couple of years ago, and I flew Southwest, which I love. I know some people don't like them, but I love them. But there was a situation where there were storms in Chicago, and the storms delayed my flight, and I had a stopover. That was supposed to be in Colorado, but the next flight out was supposed to be probably less than a half hour after I had arrived. Because of the delay, and they kept pushing it back, they pressed it back, it would have got me in Colorado way past the time that the other flight was supposed to leave. And so me sitting there was like, well, no one's thinking about the people that have to, like, probably be there on the ground. And when I called the airline, I'm like, well, so is that plane going to wait for me? And they actually sat there and was like, oh, well, you make a good point, sir. Unfortunately, no, it won't. And at that point, I had two options. I could take the flight, and I would have to have a layover in Denver, but I would be responsible for my own accommodation, because weather, being a factor, wasn't their fault, which I agree with. And that's the thing that worries me about stuff like this, is that I hope that with weather, they don't too much try to put the onus on the airline, because a lot of times that is for a safety reason, and that is for the consumer. So if there are storms, and in the long run, they were able to get me on an early flight out the next day, it worked out. I'm thankful for that. But, you know, when it comes to, like, little small things that are out of their control, I hope that they go back and kind of look at that. Like, there are some things that airlines, it is their fault. If anything, I truly think that if a layover on a plane is going to last longer than a specific amount of time, you need to deboard the plane. There have been horror stories of people on a tarmac for about 4 or 5 hours in a plane that was not moving. You don't want to hear stories about that? I once sat on one where our plane landed, and we sat there for almost 45 minutes. It couldn't get out. And you've got people standing in the aisles and people who were kind of like anxious to get out of there. That was 45 minutes. I can only imagine what an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours in a cooped up plane and you're not flying would be like. I think after like 45 minutes to an hour, I would rather just have people go back out and wait within the concourse area where they came in at, I would rather do that than to have somebody sitting on a plane for that long.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and it's going in the right direction. I don't think this is a bad decision. I think that some of the specifics of it need to be really identified and hammered out, and it's going in the right direction, so that I'm not against it at all. It just it needs some tweaking, I think, and making sure that it's good for both the consumers and for the airlines, because otherwise, like I said, the airlines, they have a bottom line. They have stockholders that they have to report to, and as much as that's a crappy thing to say, we all earn our money from certain places, so they have to pay their employees, you know, and these are going to be your airline employees as well. So if their profit margin is reduced, they're going to do what they can to protect that, and that's going to be passing it on to the consumer.
Yeah. Yep. So this will be interesting to see how these new reimbursement rules kind of fit in regards to the consumer and for the airline. Yeah, you are going to see a lot more probably higher rates on things. I mean, you're already starting to see some things now where I think Southwest, who for years was one of the last airlines who was
bags fly free.
Well, they still are going to do that, but they are actually starting to look at actually assigned seating. Don't know how I feel about that just yet, but we shall see. And that means usually that, you know, prime seating is probably going to cost you a little bit. So we'll see where that goes. Interesting article of note that I saw here a couple of weeks ago, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it. We have mentioned this in times past, but this comes from the New York Post. It says the pen might be mightier than the sword, but it could soon be just as relevant. Educators and parents are observing a surge in U.S. youth who don't know how to read or write in cursive, which they blame on handwriting increasingly becoming obsolete in the digital age. This handwriting illiteracy is in turn made them unable to perform basic adult tasks. Kimberly Giacovino of Monroe, Connecticut, lamented to the Daily Mail that my 20-year-old granddaughter struggles to sign a check. Meanwhile, Dr. Lori Corner, the assistant superintendent for the Riverhead Central School District in New York, claims that she has, quote, encountered too many secondary students and employment candidates who cannot sign documents relative to their onboarding process. The penmanship phenomenon isn't just anecdotal either. According to a 2021 study by OnePoll, a staggering 70% of Americans struggle to read their colleagues' handwriting, while 45% claim that they can't even make out their own. Meanwhile, over 30% of survey respondents said that their illegible handwriting would make them anxious about writing on a board in front of colleagues. Others have said signing important documents would be stressful without the ability to write in cursive. Experts have blamed this trend on the rise of digital technology, which has seen teachers increasingly swap the pen out for the keyboard in the classroom. This proliferation of digital discourse is being blamed for lower IQs, which it decreased for the first time in the U.S. in decades. Last year, scientists at the University of Oregon and Northwestern discovered that IQ scores had dropped sharply, which they chalked up to technology decreasing attention spans and negating the need to think deeply about subjects. Meanwhile, Hedy Rossi, a professor emerita of education at the University of Calgary, or Calgary, for those of us who pronounce it correct, claimed that even five-year-olds are falling behind as the classroom becomes increasingly saturated with this IQ-sapping tech. Conversely, a new study by Norwegian scientists found that penmanship boosts brain connectivity, particularly across regions responsible for learning and memory. This is in part due to the fact that it's a fine motor skill rather than a simple point and swipe or operation of an iPad or other digital device. Pretty much when writing by hand, most of the brain is active, according to a professor, Audrey Vandermeer, who teaches neuropsychology at Norwegian University. She said this requires the brain to communicate between its active parts, which in turn puts the brain in a state that helps both children and adults learn more and remember better. And so pretty much in order to save the skill from pretty much going out in the way of the dodo, education experts are urging schools to reintegrate cursive into their curriculums Many education centers stopped teaching handwriting in 2010 with the Common Core State Standards Initiative, which prioritized math and reading over cursive, as they felt it was irrelevant compared to typing when it came to applicable adult skills. Now, recently, California and New York have passed new legislative bills requiring students aged 6 to 12 to learn cursive writing. Along with citing checks and other documents, cursive proficiency is necessary for being able to decipher certain documents, like the Declaration of Independence and the Diary of Anne Frank, experts argue. They said if handwriting becomes extinct, it will be a major loss to understanding history or connecting with our past. I know you are probably like me where you couldn't agree more. I would be surprised if you say you did not.
Oh, no, I've been saying that for many, many years. I made kiddo learn cursive when everything was said and done, and I said, listen, you need to learn cursive, if not for anything, but to read the note that Grandma Yo wrote in your Christmas card when she sent you that check. Because you will laugh at, this is so bad, you will laugh because Grammy Yo's English is her second language. So sometimes words get mixed up and it's fun to read. But I also use the excuse of if you learn how to write in cursive, no one else can read your notes. So there you go. You'll know who your friends are because they'll be able to read them. But yeah, no, yep. Kiddo, I made her learn cursive. And I'm like, you know, even if you don't use it, at least that way you can use it for your signature. And her cursive is very book cursive. Like her signature is very book cursive.
Wow.
And I laugh. But yeah, but then I laugh also because it's the first thing that came into my brain is, they can't sign checks.
Nope.
Who writes checks these anymore? I said yesterday, I'm like, are they paying with a check? And they're like, no. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. People don't have checks anymore. My bad.
If you have to pay taxes, some require either a check and or.
you still need to turn in a check or a money order for your passport.
Or money order. Yeah. So, yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's still required. Still funny.
So, yeah. Well, not to dump on Gen Z too much tonight, but there was also another article. It says, after growing up during the pandemic and spending multiple years in a remote, isolated environment, employers are noticing the difference. A recent survey even found that employers are going above and beyond to not hire recent college graduates in favor of older workers. Now schools are hoping to bridge the gap and help students prepare for the real world with 12-hour school days. The head teacher at All Saints Catholic College in London is launching a pilot program that consists of kids going to school for 12 hours between breakfast and dinner, public speaking lessons, and banning smartphones. The head teacher, Andrew O'Neill's solution to the problem was to extend the school day. Families can opt to sign their kids up for the program, which is a 12-hour school day with breakfast served at 7 a.m. and after-school provisions until 7 p.m. After the school day ends, the children participate in supervised homework, sports, drama, cooking, and a family-style evening meal where they can all talk to each other. O'Neill launched a program which currently has 120 signed up when he began to recognize that the students were distant and lacked a, quote, sense of belonging at school. Quite a lot of children were a bit apathetic and wanted to be isolated from others, he told the Telegraph. Thanks to the COVID-19 lockdown and the rise of smartphones, Gen Z is used to being home and on their phones interacting through social media rather than in real life. They don't want to turn up. They want to go home, and they want to be by themselves. They want to be on their device isolating themselves from others, and it's a complete tragedy of our youth, he said. He also claimed that students aren't even interested in after-school extracurricular activities anymore. He says that they wanting to be real homebirds because, of course, we had habitually made children into homebirds in lockdown. We realized we need to break this and change something here. Students are lacking soft skills, can't hold a conversation or make eye contact, he said, and he added that he's never seen this type of apathy in the 20 years he's worked with teenagers. You could be talking to a child about what they wanted to do for their A-levels, and they say, don't know, he added. Even employers are noticing this trend with recent Gen Z graduates and don't want to hire them. and December 2023, Intelligent, an online magazine focused on student life, surveyed 800 managers, directors, and executives involved in the hiring process and found that 39% of employers actively avoid hiring recent college graduates for roles they're qualified for. One in five employers say that recent college graduates are, quote, unprepared for interviews and are often unprofessional. 53% of employers surveyed that the recent college graduates struggle with eye contact. 50% said they ask for unreasonable compensation. 47% said they don't dress appropriately for interviews. And 21% said that they refuse to turn their cameras on for virtual interviews. Diane Gajoski, a professor of strategic communications at Ithaca College, suggested that these behaviors aren't entirely their fault. A lot of it is circumstantial. She says employers need to recognize that due to the COVID-19 pandemic, young people graduating from college had more than 2 years of disruption in their education as well as their social and professional development. Current seniors were in their freshman year at the height of COVID. They likely took classes online and were unable to participate in clubs, internships, or summer jobs. Surprised at the stats, and even then, are the rationales for why that's happening? Is it valid even now in 2024?
Yes, question mark. I mean, yes, it's valid, but is it something that should be used? I don't know that I guess I was very against the 12-hour day for school when you first said it, just because it was like 12 hours, man. But then it's not 12 hours of school. It's 12 hours with people. And that, I think, is something that should happen. I know a lot of people that are still nose buried in their phones. And it's like, I say something about, I'm going to call. Okay. Great example. My internet had an outage this week for twice this week. Once during a day that I normally telecommute, and that luckily or unluckily, I was in the office that day. However, it was the third time in less than a week that this outage happened, and it was not a short outage for my internet service. So got on, tried to do customer service, ended up through AI, ended up chatting on a bot with a human being because there was actual like typos and that kind of thing. So I was like, okay, cool, actual person. And I was like, I need to talk to someone because you're not understanding how frustrated I am. And I'm not trying to take this out on you as the call center person. I am trying to get to the bottom of the reason that this is bothering me. That shocked the person that I was chatting with. They're like, but I can help you. I was like, no. No, you can't. You've tried. And I appreciate you trying. I need to hear a voice of a person. And they did not know how to answer me. Until I finally said, what is a phone number that I can dial in a phone to call a person? Like I had to line it out. So yeah, I get it. I do. And as much as I would love to say, you know, it shouldn't happen, it does need to happen. I don't like the excuse of it, but I also am one of those people that are like, instead of making excuses, let's find the, let's solve the problem. So.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of things that need to break some portions of Gen Z out of that lull of what happened during COVID, and I don't know how you do it because, I mean, a part of it is it is true in what they say because for a lot of them, they don't know how to really function in some ways in society. Some broke out of it. Some still are breaking out of it. Some don't want to break out of it. And if they are going for jobs in society in which it requires them to actually talk to someone else, it is they're way behind. But even then, it's not just a Gen Z issue. It is also a generation probably above that, too, for people who don't want to be bothered, quote, with person-to-person contact. you know, we tend to want to solve a lot of things nowadays, whether it is by text, not by actual face-to-face conversations. Even in some ways, relationships now are kind of like ended or started through a phone or online. And it is, you know, when you break up, generally you kind of want to have a face-to-face meeting and say, hey, not going to work out. Sorry about that. Some people now prefer to rather ghost you or pretty much just not follow you on social media, and you have to take that as we're done. Yes, when it comes to jobs, you know, a lot of people have such unreasonable expectations or feel that they could either show up when they're ready to or ask for compensation above people who have been in that position for years longer than them, and they think that they're worth it. When you can't even probably, if it came down to $1 million deal, let alone $1,000 deal, probably get the job done because you don't have the skills yet to do it. It is a little bit of an issue. I don't know how you can fix it for the generation, the COVID generation that unfortunately had to go through that. They're going to have to kind of self-teach themselves out of it in a way, because there's really no entity that can really help you unless there's just jobs online that don't mind not, you know, communicating with you like that. But eventually, I would think that, you know, for an interview in which we need to see your face, you know, I don't know of any job in which you have not shown your face and got the job. So it's something that has to kind of, you know, they have to kind of like drag themselves up and kind of get back into the mode of, because you're going to get left behind, especially by a lot of companies and entities, unless you just figured out a way to forge your own path while doing things that only you are comfortable with. But sooner or later, those people skills have to kind of come into play, because you'll have to talk with someone, or you're going to deal with someone that's going to want things a particular way. So I don't know. It's you know, I don't know how much longer, too, we could use the excuse of, well, it was COVID. But before COVID, we were doing it. And then during COVID, you kind of went into turtle mode, but it's kind of like, you just have to do what you did before COVID. That's the road out. Where that road or how you get to it, I don't know. I guess it has to come from within at the end of the day, but we'll see. But that's an interesting take on 12-hour school days. I don't think that would work here. But
oh, gosh, no.
But, yes, good luck, and I wonder where to go with that. I want to kind of get real quick, too, into things that's trending tonight. Sony Pictures has announced the release of 28 Years Later, a sequel to 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later. It is scheduled for June 20 of 2025. It will be directed by Danny Boyle. The film is part of a new trilogy and features a cast including Jodie Comer, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Ralph Fiennes, notably... Cillian Murphy, the star of the original films, returns as executive producer. That announcement was made. Also trending tonight, Aurora is trending because Aurora Borealis, Northern Lights, is able to be seen in some spots tonight. There are some pictures coming in. Portland, Maine has a really pretty picture here. The UK has shown theirs over the skies of London. So Aurora Borealis, if you look out tonight, especially I know here there are a lot of good pictures coming in from the UK. That is going on tonight, if you can see it. The Indiana Pacers are trending tonight as they took Game 3 from the New York Knicks in the NBA playoffs. SmackDown is trending tonight, as it is Friday night. Also trending tonight, a little bit of some sad news. Throughout the day, we learned earlier that the legendary, a lot of Hollywood has been chiming in this evening. Sam Rubin KTLA out in Los Angeles, their longtime entertainment host, passed away today at the age of 64. Sam's reports were seen on various channels and stations. I know here in Chicago it was seen on WGN. He was a main part of the morning news here with his entertainment reports. But Sam, I think, was just on the air yesterday. I don't know if he was in, I've heard different stories today I don't know if he was preparing to go on this morning, was at home, collapsed, and later died of a heart attack, only 64 years old. But yeah, Sam Rubin passing away. A lot of celebrities are chiming in. Kiefer Sutherland has tweeted, Gabriel Iglesias, Jerry O'Connell, Mark McGrath, Mayim Bialik. That's just a few of the people that I'm seeing here as I go up and down the X line here on people who are chiming in about Sam Rubin. So sorry to hear about that. With some basketball trending tonight, the late game with Minnesota and Denver, that's trending. Looks like Iceland is trending because they are sitting in pictures of the Northern Lights. So it looks like that's going to be one of the main stories. For our friends across the pond, also trending, James Lawrenson, the British actor, whose 50-year career included roles in Coronation Street, Midsummer Murders, and The Crown, has died. He was 84. His death was reported by multiple UK outlets today. A cause of death and other specifics have not been reported. But yes, he played the he first appeared in 1968 as the Reverend Peter Hope in the long-running Coronation Street. Most recently appeared in the film Matilda the Musical and The Crown. So yes, for those who know across the UK outlets, he has passed away today as well. So a lot of things going on tonight. That is what is trending. Wanted to get through Potpourri real quick because one of the things that I think we talked about on this program a long time ago, and I said it, and people thought I was strange for saying it, and it's kind of finally coming to fruition. It was just a matter of time. So Dave & Buster's, which is, what's the best way to describe Dave & Buster's? It is a
Chuck E. Cheese for adults.
Yes. But then we have to explain what Chuck E. Cheese is. But it's kind of like an entertainment place where you can eat, drink, and play video games. Well, guess what, friends? Dave & Buster's will soon begin letting customers wager on popular arcade games in its app. The company is partnering with gaming producer Lucra to provide customers with, quote, a fully immersive experience at venues nationwide, according to a news release. The partnership will integrate Lucra's gamification software into the Dave & Buster's app, allowing loyalty members to compete with each other, earn rewards, and unlock exclusive perks. The new partnership gives our loyalty members real-time, unrivaled gaming experiences and reinforces our commitment to continuing to elevate our customer experience through innovative, cutting-edge technology, according to Simon Murray, who is the Senior Vice President of Entertainment and Attractions at Dave & Buster's. The betting function will only be available to players age 18 or older and in 44 states, according to CNBC. Dave & Buster's owns 223 venues in North America, including 164 branded stores in 42 states, Puerto Rico, and Canada. They also operate the 59 Main Street branded stores in 20 states across the country. How about that?
Yeah, you called that one.
I told you it was just a matter of time before you'd be able to do something like that. I've told you, it's going to be a matter of time before you start seeing Uno tournaments and Monopoly tournaments for money. I know it's coming because it's just, it's a thing now of where if you can get anything done for money, you're all in it. I know there are some things that stop you from eating candy. This is quite an interesting story. If you go to Walgreens, Walgreens can't keep up with young people's demand for its in-house mango gummy candy with a peelable exterior. Bags of the Nice Brand's tiny squishy Nosh, which retails for $1.99, can't stay stocked long enough to change pharmacies across the U.S. The sweet treat has been routinely selling out since being introduced last fall. The secondhand gummy market is even peddling them online for upwards of $40 a bag. They're so fun to eat, according to a TikTok influencer, Trine Karen, who said the candy that's been all over social media. The National Confectioners Association confirmed that both Gen Z and millennials are its largest market. Her one-minute assessment is a really good mochi-like snack. The outside is coarse, while its innards are juicy, got nearly 9 million views. Meanwhile, Walgreens is piggybacking on the shock of success. The store reposted her video on TikTok with the caption, "We're loving everyone's reaction to our nice mango gummy peelable candy." Many in the hungry online audience beg for an urgent restocking, with comments ranging from, "Have been to 6 different Walgreens with no luck," to "A more desperate, we need more." Rest assured, more are coming later this month, according to Walgreens Vice President of Own Brands. He says, literally in about 4 to 5 days after we launched it, we sold through nearly all of the product. If we had expected that to happen, we probably would have had more.
I have yet to try it, so don't ask me if I've tried it.
No, but here's the thing about TikTok. It is an interesting thing as to where TikTok can either make or break something. And the minute that it makes something, everyone seems to kind of have this gotta have it. It's like they gotta, they all have, it's almost like the Popeye's chicken sandwich. Everybody's gotta have it. Everybody's gotta be, you know, to go and run and do a video on it. You can only watch so many videos about a candy or about a food. Is it overkill?
I don't know about overkill, but there's the FOMO. The fear of missing out.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And then, of course, you want to be first.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. This from Venice, and I guess it was just a matter of time. If you want to go to Venice, day trippers will now have to pay €5 or $5.35 to enter the Lagoon City on 29 peak days, mostly on weekends until July 14th, as part of its trial phase. Ancient and beautiful, the city is sometimes referred to as an open-air museum, and now visitors to Venice will have to pay the entry fee after the tourist hub on Thursday became the first in the world to introduce a charging system for day trippers. In a bid to thin out the crowds that thronged to see the canals, bridges, and striking architecture during vacation season, as we said, you'll have to pay that. And so tourists who have booked at least one night at a hotel in the city will be exempt from the charge, as will residents, workers, and students in the city. Visitors under the age of 14 will also be exempt, but like the day trippers, they will also have to ensure they have registered online and receive QR codes. Those without smartphones will have to go to the city's Santa Lucia train station to buy tickets. Among the thousands of people lining up at the station for a ticket, they said it was one person who was from Tennessee. They said that they thought that the charge was a wonderful idea. One says, "Venice deserves to be taken care of. I think it's more than worth it. I come here often, and I'll pay every time." While there will be no limits on the number of people who can register, officials hope that the fee will put people off on days it applies. It says, "We're not looking to collect money, tax people, or introduce a police state. We're being democratic about it, but the important message is, please, if you are a day tripper, choose another day." While there are no turnstiles at the city's entrance points, to make sure people have passes, inspectors will make random checks and issue fines of 50 to 300 euros to anyone who has failed to register. They get an average of 50,000 people per day. I guess.
Yes. I would pay it in a heartbeat. It's sinking. The city is sinking, and you're adding people, no offense, but my fat butt's going there. Other guys, other people's rear ends, fat or otherwise, are going there. You're breathing carbon dioxide into the air. You're ruining stuff, and it's an open-air museum. It really is a beautiful place. I would love to have, if it's in the cards, before I say anything, if I end up having grandkids, I would love to be able to say that, you know, this is a beautiful place to go. I think you should, and be able to have them be able to go. So, yes, so, I will pay it.
I mean, I guess I wouldn't mind. But the bad part to that that I feel is that I think it opens up a Pandora's box for other places to start doing the same thing potentially. And, you know, before you know it, major cities are going to have within particular spots, you know, you have to pay to get into this particular section. You know, here in Chicago, the one place that a lot of people go to is the Cloud Gate, or what we call the Bean, in Millennium Park. My fear is that, you know, you start things like that, eventually you could see Chicago put up a huge wall. You'd be like, hey, you want to go around and take a picture at the Cloud Gate of the Bean? Yeah, you can pay about $7 or $8, and then you can go on around there and go take your picture. And that's, I mean, it's, I get it with Venice. I get it because it is such a beautiful place and people want to go, but I think that it will not be the last time we hear of a place charging for people to get there. Even more so than what it costs to travel there to see it, which you thought would have been for free.
So, okay, I guess then my question is, every night, every day that people go to the Bean, and I've been to the Bean, so I know, I've seen it up close and personal. I've done the whole, I'm not going to actually touch it, but I'm going to put my hand up near it because there's so many fingerprints on that thing, except for on days that rain. You're telling me that if somebody said, listen, you want to go to the Millennium Park, we're going to put up a gate at the beginning and the end of Millennium Park. As part of that, you can go and see Cloud Gate. Otherwise, sucks to be you, right? You don't get to get a picture right next to Cloud Gate. You're telling me that you wouldn't pay that entry fee?
Don't care.
To
nope.
see... Well, nope. I know you live there, but you don't think that you live there. You've seen it. It's done. What I'm saying is you wouldn't want that because you got to pay the people clean Cloud Gate anyway. Don't you?
This city, I love my city. This city already kind of charges taxes for a lot of different things. And the amusement tax that is put on many different things that you do is already quite high. Which is why you in some ways have to be selective about what you do. You know, perhaps different overseas, but once you come to the United States, there are particular cities that are quite expensive for what they do. Thankfully, we are not the most expensive. I worry about a trip to Los Angeles. I worry about a trip to New York because those are places that are highly taxable. It's enough to where you now have to kind of like, pick and choose what you're going to do because you can't do everything. You know, are they going to, you know, jack up the price on seeing the Statue of Liberty? Are you going to jack up? I mean, it's kind of like, where does it start? Where does it end? You know, are you
I don't think that would be something that I would agree with. If you said Venice is charging for you to be able to see, you know, one of their squares that's already charging to go into it. Then I would be like, no, absolutely not. But charging on top of charging, no. But if you're going into the open air areas, then why not?
I guess. Like, that is, to me, I guess because it's a travel trip, that's different. But like I said, I think locally at home, it opens up, like, a Pandora's box for people like, Venice is charging. Why don't we charge for people to, like, you know, go into certain places and start doing different stuff? and it won't end. You know.
Oh, sure. Well, the Karens of the world will unite.
One would only think. I don't know. But, yeah, if I'm going that far, I guess so. I mean, $5 to get to Venice, I guess it's – you already paid a good grand to get there. Another $5 is not going to hurt you.
And that's if you're not spending the night.
Yes, if you're not spending the night. If you are online and you luck out, you definitely will not be what one person was actually able to do. The luxury jewelry maker Cartier – or Cartier, isn't known for giving stuff away, but in the case of one man from Mexico, they pretty much did. Rogelio Villarreal was paging through Cartier's webpage in a moment of idleness when he came upon an offer that seemed too good to be true. He says he broke out in a cold sweat, as he wrote on his account on X, formerly known as Twitter. Cartier apparently had made a mistake and listed gold and diamond earrings for 237 pesos, which is equivalent to $14, instead of the asking price of 237,000 pesos of $14,000. Villarreal ordered two sets. What followed was months of back and forth, during which he says Cartier offered him a consolation prize instead of the jewelry, and during which Mexican officials backed his position that the company should honor the advertised price. He finally got the earrings last week at his price, and he posted a video online of himself unboxing the merchandise, but he soon grew tired of the public attention, finding that not all that glitters is gold, and on Monday posted, "All right, already, talk about something else. I'm tired of the earrings being the only thing anyone knows about my personality." His case had become a lightning rod online during an especially polarized time in Mexico ahead of its June 2nd presidential elections. Some observers criticized him for taking advantage of what they saw as an honest mistake by the top-end jewelry company. Some claimed he should give the earrings back or pay taxes on them. Some called him a thief. Villarreal, who is a doctor during his medical residency, said he had to fight for months to get the company to actually deliver and claimed that they offered to send him a bottle of champagne instead. The company did not respond to requests for comment. He says, "I have the worst luck in the world and I've never made any money, and what I have is because I bought it," he wrote in his social media accounts. But now he has been able to buy two $14,000 sets of earrings for only $28. He says he gave one of them to his mother. "It feels great and it's cool not to be the underdog for once in my life," he wrote. Jesus Montaneo, the spokesman for Mexico's consumer protection agency known as Proficio, confirmed Villarreal's account of his struggle. He said he filed a complaint in December. There is a conciliation hearing scheduled for May, but the consumer already received his purchase. Asked about the ethics of it all, Montaneo said companies, quote, have to respect the published price. If there's a mistake, it's not the consumer's fault. I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be, so you might as well just go ahead and say that Cartier was at fault.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. It sucks to be you. You are charging way too much money for whatever just because you're Cartier. And you know what? Good for him. Bravo. You know what? I wish you would have given me those diamond earrings.
Well, he still has a pair left that we know of, so
dude, hit me up. I have some very cute earlobes. Pictures
so, yes,
will go anywhere you'd like them to go. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you might have to hit him up to see if he still has it. But you know what? He's probably going to charge you quite a bit. I want to get to this last story here on potpourri, because this like bothered me to no end. For the New York Post, it says, "Would you pay $600 for chicken wings with caviar?" If you said no, people who went to the Miami Grand Prix did. A glass of $3,600 rosé. But that was all at the Miami F1 Grand Prix. Formula One fans flocked to the Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens, Florida, for the third annual Miami Grand Prix, which was a three-day affair that kicked off on Friday. And the Hard Rock International announced the return of the Hard Rock Beach Club for this year's big event back in March. And those looking to lean into the luxurious status of F1 took advantage, including Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, NASCAR driver Ryan Ellis offered a glimpse into what people who visit the iconic hospitality space paid for their food. He says, F1 is a little more expensive than NASCAR. The menu had a variety of options, and the cheapest options were a $170 yellowfin tuna poke and a $170 empanada duo. Guests can also order a fruit refresher for $190, steamed buns for $120, a sampler platter for $210, a crispy wing board for $190, and carne asada nachos for $180. One of the most expensive food items are the Maine lobster rolls for $280 and chilled prawn for $290. And you can add 1 ounce of caviar to any item for an additional $400. Ellis then shared a photo of the drinks menu, which had even more shocking prices, including a bucket of 5 bottled waters for $25. Some of the more expensive drinks listed include a 1 liter bottle of Armand de Brignac Rose with a price tag of $3,600, a bottle of Comos Extra Anejo for $4,800, and a bottle of Clos Azul Ultra for a whopping $12,000. Now, those drinks retail for $1,500 and $2,000, respectively. All the costly food drink options are on top of the purchase of a 3-day pass to Hard Rock Beach Club deck, which costs $1,750. How would you like to be there for that?
Excuse me. No. I have other things to do for that. Yeah. I'm really okay.
So, my friends, next week I'm going to promise you a more expanded version of the After Dark. But we're going to have a couple of quick things to cover on After Dark. So here's what we're going to do. Since you have to get the kitties probably out of the room if they haven't left already. I will tell you that the following things that we will be talking about coming up within the next minute are those of an adult nature. Listener discretion is advised. I will come back after a brief retro moment, an additional retro moment for you, and then we'll have After Dark right after this.
If going to a movie show is right for you, if candy eating and popcorn chewing is right for you, if what you do is right for you, no matter what the others do, then RC Cola is right for you. It's not too heavy, not too sweet, it's right for you.
RC Cola.
RC's just an easy going, right for you.
RC Cola.
If what you do is right for you, no matter what the others do, then RC Cola is right for you. It's right for you.
All right, welcome back, page one. We are now going into a brief After Dark conversation tonight. I had a couple of things that I wanted to kind of cover. The first one, I feel like I probably have to get this one out of the way first. And it was actually an interesting article because normally I do not always rely on nothing against Tiffany Haddish, but I don't rely on Tiffany Haddish to probably be the reason why we're probably going to discuss the first thing tonight, but it actually was kind of interesting. So pretty much what happened was that Tiffany Haddish recently in a video or in an interview had talked about how she wanted to and now I lost my article. Look at that.
See, there you go.
Nope, here it is. Got it. Sorry.
Oh, darn it.
So she shared that she had a huge crush on Henry Cavill?
Yeah, it's Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill. But when she met
Superman.
Yeah, but when she met him, she found him to be a little bit too awkward, joking, I should be talking to him about Dungeons and Dragons. She said she found it to be a little less than super. The girl ship star shared that she once lusted after the Superman actor, but her feelings quickly took a turn after she met the 40-year-old, which is something she's found with other celebrities. All the famous guys, I used to think, oh, I would love to do it to them. I know them now, and I'm like, no, she told the Los Angeles Times in an interview published May 2nd. I used to really want Henry Cavill. I think he's so hot, but I met him, and he was so awkward. It was then that the comedian realized that she wouldn't want to date him after all, adding, it was like, this would be weird. I should be talking to him about Dungeons & Dragons. Maybe he'd be more comfortable. She also joked, maybe he's just never had a black woman be like, what's up? What's your credit score? Do you like spaghetti? I'll cook for you. Are you afraid of South Central or not? But despite the awkwardness, she acknowledges that he's still beautiful. And while Henry found love and is expecting a baby with Hollywood executive Natalie Mancuso, Tiffany is looking to break away from dating celebrities following her split from Common in 2021, telling the LA Times that she's using Bumble, but not the celebrity dating app Raya, to meet her match. Plus, she says she has a new dating policy. She'll only see the guy for 9 months before she's out of there. And what is she looking for in her next partner? As she said in the past, she needs someone reliable and preferably clean. She says, good credit score because I need to know you're responsible. You need to have good hygiene. That's really important to me. I can't stand bad breath or funky armpits. And while Tiffany and Henry never came to be, there are plenty of stars who dated this celebrity crush. But I guess the question here in the After Dark segment is there ever a time when you dated a crush and it didn't work out the way you wanted to and it swore you off from ever dating another crush?
Yes. You're telling me it hasn't? Not for you?
Yes.
I thought that was a universal thing. Crushes are...
Yes.
Rarely do anyone that we put on a pedestal live up to the hype.
But is it because we overhype it, or is it because we have such great expectations?
I think it's a little bit of both. And then also on top of that, most of the time, people with crushes on other people, it's because they're from afar. It's based on something very specific, not on the person. Mine was definitely, he was good looking. He was just really good looking. And then, yeah.
As your voice wanders off there.
How's that? That noise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's basically it.
I can see this, and the thing is that it. Yeah, here's some things, I'm gonna go down a wrong primrose path here. I'll be careful how I do this. There have been particular people where after I've seen them, they ruin it because of particular things that they put out there.
Yes.
And certain people who, quote, were a certain way that you saw them on social media, but afterwards it was far from the truth. And were in worse, dire straits than what you realized. And then they totally almost drag you possibly into that. And you don't want to be a part of that. That's that can happen. Or people who you thought were a specific way. And then it comes out to be a little bit of a farce, and it's not true. I think people who have a lot of drama, just like manufactured or not manufactured, it can kind of be a little bit of a turnoff, because if you're not a drama-filled person, you know, it can ruin it, and there's couple of people that's been like that. You kind of had a high expectation, like, oh, well, this would be great if that ever happened. And then when it finally did happen, and then you found out a lot more than what you wanted to take in. But I would say at that point, though, can it be saved?
Possibly. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think that it just really depends on what the crush was based on. Like I said, the one that was just, they were just good looking. I'd never heard them talk before. And then they opened their mouths. And words came out, not just they opened their mouth, but then words came out, and I that one couldn't be saved. But then others could be, depending on what's going on. Like, Henry Cavill, I used to think he was good looking, and then I saw him on some interviews, and how you didn't know he was awkward after seeing interviews with him. Now, if he kept his mouth shut, then that was fine. That's what ball gags are for.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow. I don't think
he's way too pretentious for me, I think.
I think that's the first. I don't think we've ever mentioned ball gags on this show before. But
if we haven't, you're welcome.
Yes, that's a first. I want to get through this other quick story here. Next week, I promise you, we will have an expanded After Dark. But this one is, what is sexsomnia?
Here's what I know happened. That one right now.
With the dangerous sex sleep disorder. It's more than a sex dream. Sexsomnia, or sleep sex, is a rare but real sleep disorder that causes people to engage in sexual behaviors, including dirty talk, self-pleasuring, and sex, all while asleep. The condition is part of a category of sleep disorders called parasomnias that include sleepwalking, sleep talking, sleep eating, and sleep terrors, which occur when the brain is not in a dream state. There are disorders of arousal, according to Dr. Thomas Schneck, a professor and senior staff psychiatrist at Hennepin County Medical Center at the University of Minnesota. They most often occur during the slowest, deepest stage of sleep, called delta sleep. It's like an alarm or trigger goes off in the central nervous system, and you go from your basement to your roof in no time flat. A study of 1,000 people found that just over 7% of people experienced sexsomnia at least once in their lives, and almost 3% were currently living with the condition. However, it's very difficult to study, as because most people have no recollection of their actions and only become aware of the issue when they injure themselves or are made aware by their partner. Your cognition is deeply asleep and you're not with the program, but your body is activated. That's dangerous because then you start walking and running and doing all sorts of things without your mind being awake. What is really disconcerting to these patients is that they have total amnesia. It's the bed partner or family member telling them, you did this, why did you do that? And then the patient says, I don't remember anything. So they're fully, really embarrassed and full of shame, very apologetic, and totally miserable. Now, while some couples engage in counseling, sex started during an episode of sexsomnia, the condition can lead to legal charges. And some people have been charged with even things as more extensive as rape after citing the disorder as a legal defense. There's still a lot about sexsomnia that experts don't understand, but it's believed to be genetic. They also say that medications such as clonazepam can treat the condition along with behavioral changes such as reducing stress and anxiety and practicing healthy sleepy habits. I did not know about this. That's something. You said
I don't have it, thank God. But I've heard of it, yes.
That's crazy.
And it was the I learned about it because somebody said sexsomnia, and I forgot what, like, I think they were talking about a case where somebody tried to use that as their defense. But not for rape. I don't remember what it was about, though. Domestic something. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I jokingly said, oh, is that when you don't have enough, you know, like you haven't had sex in a really long time? So, and then I learned what it was. So, yes.
I just thought it was more or less like dreams and you actually having like, the too far more,
Yeah, like take the regular dreams that everybody tends to have when they're teenagers and going through puberty and then ramp it up about 75%.
That is
what you were thinking, I'm assuming.
Kind of. It's along that lines, yes. Along that lines. So, yes. But I'll leave it there. But I promise you next week, because I'm looking at the clock, and the clock on the wall is just about telling us that we're out of time. I hate to kind of end it that way, even though, let's see, a happy story. Do I have one? It's a quick happy story. I would hate to leave you with a gross story, so I think I afford a better part of it. I will not use this farm story, but it's an unknown, but yeah, I'm not even going to do that. So with that, I am going to say, well, I'll tell you this one, though. In New York, hundreds of people gathered in New York City Park this weekend shouting, "Cheeseball Man." It started with some flyers, which have been hanging all over Manhattan. A simple message from a masked man who wished to remain anonymous. It said, "Come see me eat this entire jar of cheese balls on April 27th. He said he didn't really expect that many people to show up, but they did. And the video on social media has 10 million views. The cheese ball man hyped up the crowd by running around holding a flag with his masked face on it. And then when the time came, more than 2,000 calories of cheddar and cornmeal was eaten, and the crowd went wild. And after almost a half hour, the now legendary Cheeseball Man finally accomplished his quest and immediately signed autographs. He asked ABC not to disclose his name, but they can't tell you that he's a 22-year-old who just graduated from NYU. And he says, "I clean up the city. I pick up trash. When I see people, they need to..." he said, "but will he keep the mask?" He says, "Oh, I have to do it in the mask." By the way, he said he wants to do it again next year with an even bigger tub of cheese balls. So if you're in New York on April 27th, 2025, go and watch the Cheeseball Man.
You know what? He is a hero. He is a national treasure. And he's in a coma after that as well.
That is awesome. Do you have any shout-outs? I know you said there's a lot of birthdays this month.
There was two this past week, and we have one coming up. So I've got Matthew and a couple of friends and a coworker. And then also shout-out to Cheeseball Man. Like I said, hero, legend, national treasure. Love me some cheeseball, so I'm already on board with this dude.
Of course, yes. If you have a giant ball, a thing of cheese balls, make sure you share it with mom this weekend.
that would be me. Hand is up in the air, cheese ball man.
Only a mother could love that one. But no shout outs this week for me. Just a happy Mother's Day once again to all of you out there. We thank you so much for tuning in to another program. Will be with you next Friday night, same time, 10 o'clock in the east, 9 o'clock central standard time. As always, you can hear us not only here on Blog Talk Radio, but wherever you get your podcast, whether that is on Apple, iHeartRadio, or iTunes, or Spotify. So until next we meet, take care of yourselves and each other. Thanks so much for listening. For Mary, I am LeVar. Have a great night, a great week ahead, and we'll see you next time here on Page One.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend!
Thanks for listening to Page One.
Page One. Page One.
Don't forget to get the latest show info on Twitter at @NewsCommentBTR and add us as a podcast on Apple, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and other platforms where we can be found.